This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Good evening. This is Ron Clutho. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL. Thank you for joining us. I have a really interesting guest today from Afghanistan, as promised. This is somebody that I respect a lot. He's a leader in the local Afghan community. In fact, I call him Khan because this is an honorific term. I think he's a real leader in the community. I'm going to call him Mo. We're not going to use his real name because there's a chance that somebody back home might be listening to this or somehow get wind of this story. We don't want to jeopardize the safety of his family that are still in Afghanistan. So we're going to call him Mo for today. But believe me, it's a very interesting story we're going to share. And Mo, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Ron.
And I wanted to, as I usually do, start with your childhood. And I think you were born during the era when the Soviet Union was occupying Afghanistan. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And I believe that was until 1989. So you've seen many regime changes in your life over there. So can you, I guess, start by what your life was like as a young child when the Soviets were in control of Afghanistan?
Ron, actually very interesting. Most of the Afghans, they have very interesting life. They've been through a lot of up and down, and I'm one of them. So originally I was born in Eastern Kunar province when I was 1 year old. My dad was a high school teacher, and then later he decided to become a police officer. So we moved to Kabul, which was the capital of Afghanistan, and I went to the public schools over in Kabul. And slowly, gradually, things were changing security-wise.
Can you talk about the schools? Was it like a Soviet-style education in those days?
Yes.
So you were getting like kind of indoctrination about their way of thinking?
Yes. It was more socialism in schools. They were basically...
It doesn't really mix well with Islam, I don't think, or does it?
No, not really. But since I was a child and I had no really logic of... going which way? We just adopted, you know. Mm-hmm. We say that the human, they born twice. Once you born from your mother's womb, and the second you born in the society. Mm. So we were just gradually adopting. Everything was they were teaching us, and everything we were learning from the society. But after the Mujahideen, the collapse of basically the Soviet Union, that regime was set up by the Soviet Union. After the collapse of that, the civil war started in Afghanistan. The Mujahideen were pretty much dominated the country, and civil war started. So we have to, with my family, we have to leave the country. So we left Kabul, went to Jalalabad, and that was a long journey full of danger. And then from Jalalabad, we moved to Pakistan, Punjab, one of the Punjab province.
And that was fairly close to the Afghan border, right?
Yes. Close eastern border. We have long border with Pakistan, and there was mainly two routes, one from south side and one was from eastern. So we chose the eastern route to go to Pakistan without any documentation, any sort of passports, because all the government agencies and government sectors were closed. So we had no access to passport or any legal documentation. And hundred thousand Afghans were every day traveling to Pakistan.
100,000. What year would this have been?
I was in 90s.
In the 90s. Is it true that, or do you know whether I heard that the Americans were kind of supporting the Mujahideen because the Mujahideen were fighting against the Soviet Union. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess.
Yes. Matter of fact, most of our relatives, they were Mujahideen. And
Mujahideen basically means
freedom, yeah, fighting for their country. Mujahideen is, the word is taken from jihad, and jihad means a struggle. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, Mujahideen or jihad means that fighting in the way of God. It means if you're disciplining yourself, if you're struggling, and to make your life better, that's jihad.
So it's almost like an internal struggle.
Internal, yes. So during that time, like I said, we have had a lot of family, extended family, my dad relatives, my mother relatives, they were Mujahideen. Mm. So when we went to Pakistan, the first challenge we faced were facing those relatives, because we were not part of Mujahideen, we were part of Soviet Union government, and they were not treating us with respect and dignity. But as long as the life moved forward, we adjusted ourselves, and we went to, my dad was always always teaching, and I still remember, you know, that having education and a disciplined life, and life is the key. So whatever I am and wherever I am, it's because of my parents. I believe if you still have your parents, you know, this is the beautiful gift of God, you know, given to you. And we all should appreciate that. And if people are listening, you know, I would say that whenever you have chance, call your parents and say I love you to your parents.
Mm. A universal thought.
Yeah.
Okay, I believe the Taliban gained control in 1995, right?
Yes.
And then did your family return to Afghanistan during this time, you said?
Yes.
After the change since you left? I mean, it must have been a big change.
Yes, after the collapse of the Taliban, the first two people from my family, they came to Kabul, Afghanistan, was my dad and my brother.
This was, you said, after the collapse of the Taliban?
Yes.
You mean like when 2001?
Yes,
when
in 2001.
Okay. So the Taliban was in control from 1995 until 2001.
2000.
So then you came back.
Yeah, then my dad and my brother, they came back from the Pakistan to Kabul, and they have got jobs with Germans. GIZ, German Technical Corporation, and then I was staying with my family in Punjab. In 2002, my dad told me to, you can come and join, bring the family. So I helped my family to move from Pakistan to Kabul. And then in 2003, I got a job with Americans in the capacity of U.S. mail courier. I did so many different jobs.
Yeah. Okay. How long did that last? How long did you work for the Americans?
Worked from 2003 to 2014. In 2014, I was granted a special immigrant visa, SIV. Came to St. Louis, Missouri with my family.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about this SIV? What is, who receives that? How is it different from just like immigrant or refugee?
SIV is mainly granted to those that who serve the American forces or American civilians in the capacity of, in any capacity, as long as you serve for 2 years with Americans back in Afghanistan or Iraq, you're automatically qualified for SIV. SIV is, they call them special immigrant visa. I would say the only difference SIV from the other immigrant visa is upon arrival, as soon as you arrive, with SIV visa, you will be receiving your green cards within a month.
And was that difficult to get? Did you have to go through a lot of bureaucracy and red tape?
Obviously, yes. I would say yes. It's a lot of paperwork you have to go through, especially if you're local. And even you're part of the system working with American, but still, you know, I wouldn't say bureaucracy, but it's a lot of paperwork. You have to go through a lot of interviews, a lot of background checks until you qualify for that. So I applied in 2012 and took me 2 years to get my SIV visa.
Now, was it just becoming dangerous for you? Is that why you left?
Well, working with American in Afghanistan from 2003 to 2014, we were facing danger every day on a daily basis. So life is not easy in Afghanistan. You don't realize until you get here. But that was our everyday facing danger and putting our life in jeopardy,
yeah,
and fulfilling our obligation and duties. I feel I was committed and I chose that path. I feel that's the right way to do.
Do you think that most Afghan civilians, just regular people, welcomed the Americans when they came and
yes,
they stayed, or do you think they didn't want them there?
Very much at the beginning. Things later changed. I mean, at the beginning of 2001, 2, 3, until I would say 2006, Americans and international forces were more welcome on the streets and the villages. But things were rapidly and slowly changed. 2006 and 2006, after 2006 was not a good time for all, for American forces and Afghan forces and general population.
It was were the people kind of gradually changing their minds about the American presence because of all the violence?
Because of the violence is also the high corruption on the government level and fake promises being made by the politicians and by both sides that derive people from believing on American and their forces. So they were keeping that gap, and that distance was coming bigger and bigger every day.
And how did life change for, like, for example, the case of women and girls? I think under the Taliban, previously they hadn't been able to go to school, but I believe many girls did go to school when they,
yes,
the last
it was,
20 years. And what other ways did life change?
The life was, I'm not criticizing on the negative side of that, what the government did and what the American forces, but there was a lot of positive things that happened while I was over there, technology-wise and going to schools. Education was, it was expediting, and people and were going to, children, women, and girls were going to schools. There was a lot of opportunities for the ones that they could afford to go to private university. Before, during the Soviet Union time, we have had no private sector. So private sector were pretty much getting strong every day.
I feel like Afghanistan is one of those countries like Poland and maybe Ukraine that are just kind of almost like a victim of geography because they're surrounded by all these powerful neighbors, and they're just kind of stuck in the middle.
All right.
I want to talk about all the things you've been doing here in St. Louis with the local community when we come back. This is where the story really gets interesting for me, to hear about some of the challenges that we've seen for the new arrivals in St. Louis for the last year.
Right.
I'm listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 One News Talk STL. We'll be right back.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. I'm talking with Mohan, I'm going to say, because I'm giving him this honorific title since he's such a respected member of of the community here. You said you came here in 2014. Was it your choice to come to St. Louis, or was that just where you wound up?
It was my choice because my aunt, she'd been living here for a long, long time, and I was in touch with, while I was in Afghanistan, I was in touch with my aunt. So I had family here, and I chose to come to St. Louis.
Obviously, you spoke English when you came, because I think among the things you did with Americans was interpret, but did you have any other type of cultural problems when you came here, or
not really
problems?
Not really. For yes, obviously for my family, my children, you know, it was a big shock. I'm not gonna tell you how many children I have, more than a dozen.
But I think that's just a slight exaggeration, but anyway.
But yes, for them it was a big change overall. But they had me to support them emotionally and culturally, advise them, you know, counsel them every day. Since I was working with American for a long, long time, and I knew how things would be. I already anticipated that. But yes, life was not easy, but things don't get change overnight. You have to work for it.
Yeah. What was the first job you had here?
First job, I was working with Vantage. I believe it was a company. They were hacking logos on the T-shirts. So I just worked for 2 months, and I realized this job is not for me. I'm a more action top guy. I want something else. So I decided to go and do the security job. I was working for security, and from security to another security company, and then I work as a culture advisor and interpreter, and now I have a different job.
And then you, I know you're really involved with helping some of the newcomers, but, you know, before 2021, we did have Afghan people in St. Louis. So did you immediately get involved with the Afghan community in St. Louis and kind of help out, or did that come later?
Yes, that's something natural. I always been helpful to no matter who you are, and as long as I realized that you need help, I always help people. So in 2021, August, I thought that it's a good time to help the newcomers. St. Louis welcomed me to the city, and it's time to welcome the new families. So I took active part. Not me, my son, a 15-year-old, he did the same thing. So we've been helping the newcomers on daily basis, every day, no matter if it's Social Security office, it's school, whether they need help with doctor appointments, they need help with speaking with police officers, or anywhere, any place. My phone's always, you know, rings. At least I receive dozen calls every day, but I never get tired.
Okay, let's talk about that. You know, America pulled out of Afghanistan last August. And do you have anything you want to say about that, the way and how and when we did that? Or
no one was, I believe nobody was expecting that hasty withdrawal of the American forces. But things happens, you know. I don't know. I'm not a decision maker, or we're just a small, you know, fish in the pond, even a small.
Yeah.
That was whoever decision was that. I mean, they might think it was a right decision, but to me, if you asking me, it was a hasty decision. Mm-hmm. And the withdrawal of the forces affected the lives of hundreds of 100,000 Afghans. And the ones that I know, and I talk to them every day, I know how difficult life for them being at home, doing nothing.
Well, now, you said that in order to get the SIV status, special immigrant visa, you had to have worked for the Americans for at least two years, right? And I remember you and I were working last year before Americans pulled out, trying to help a lot of the people that worked for the Americans, but maybe didn't work for a full 2 years because the funding ran out, or you know, nothing of their own fault, or because they, I think they also needed to have their American supervisor or officer sign off on the forms, and so many of them had left the country. So there were hundreds, maybe thousands of potential SIV people that would be in danger under the Taliban that were kind of not able to qualify for SIV status. So a lot of them are still there, right?
Yes.
And are you hearing anything about how it is for them now? Is it, are they, I've heard from people here that talk about their relatives or family members or friends that had been working for the Americans. They're kind of moving around from house to house and trying to stay one step ahead of people that want to do them harm because of what they did for.
Yes, obviously at the very beginning of after the withdrawal of the forces, it was completely a chaos. I know a lot of families, they had their fear that they would be harmed by Taliban, so they were moving from house to house. They were changing their location from one place to another. We hear some stories too. I'm not sure how true those stories will be unless you have a legitimate source to verify that. But I would say, yes, that was a great shock for most of those, the ones they somehow served American, you know, they were involved in that. Supporting U.S. mission in Afghanistan, that their lives are mostly, at some degree, greatly affected. One, they're out of jobs. They cannot support their family. And the other thing is that they fear for their life. He never knows. There's no accountability. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to you once they find out if you're supporting their missions? So it's uncertainty. I wouldn't comment anymore on that, but I can tell you, yes, life were greatly affected.
Looking back, do you think it was good or bad that the Americans were there for 20 years? Was that a good thing, or ultimately would it have been better if we'd never gone?
Look, Afghanistan, I think, always have had good relationship with the United States of America, and you always want to have a strong body on your side. So it was an opportunity for Afghans to stay with American collectively and work with Americans and have this country, you know, to stabilize instead of, I believe, fighting. America is a great country, great people, and having a country like America on your side is always a plus.
How does it look now? How is society now? I believe it's not possible for girls to go to school again. What are some other changes in society that have occurred in the last year?
Yes, I heard a lot of stories, and I heard on a daily basis from a news channel or social media that the girls and women, they cannot go to school anymore. They don't have that much of freedom. On the other hand, when you listen to Taliban, they say they're working on a plan to implement a plan where everyone can go to school. The women can go back to school, but their plan and what they're working, what kind of plan they're working, nobody knows about.
And I hear a lot about just economic problems. A lot of people don't have jobs. It's hard to support their families. So
that's a big, that's something really true, that a lot of people, they don't have jobs, and they I would say the very lucky person will be the ones that they if they have someone live in Western countries or United States, so they can financially at least support him once a month or twice.
Do you expect the Taliban to stay in control for a long time, or do you have any thoughts about that?
The way they're moving right now, I don't expect that they will stay in power for a long time, because obviously they're not, their treatment, the way they're treating people and the way the people have expectation from a legitimate government is very contradicted. So they, I'm not sure how long they will stay in power, and if the way that right now they are, they're running the country, the majority of people, I would say, they're not happy with it.
Okay. And then when you talked about the chaos of withdrawal at the airport last year in Kabul, that it was SIV people and their families that were supposed to be given priority, but that didn't always happen, right?
Yes, that never happened. The SIV were left behind, and the ones that they made it, they came to United States of America. Those were the ones that they knew someone at the gate, or they had good, they had some sort of support to get them and their family into to the airport and flee the country. But the SIV were left behind. And there was not a...
Well, many of them did get out, but by no means all, right? Many of the people that did come here were SIV, but...
Yes, they were qualified as SIVs, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how many, do you know how many eventually came out from the country in that last year? Was it?
I would say over 100,000.
And how many would you think came to St. Louis?
Not exactly. I don't have the exact data how many families.
Well, you probably helped every one of them. So
yes, it will be hard to count. I would say over 500 families.
500 families or 500 people?
I would say 500, yeah, people.
Okay, so they started coming to St. Louis. Tell me if I'm wrong. Because it was, as you say, so chaotic, they didn't have time to go through the proper, quote-unquote, refugee processing. So the people that left Kabul were sent to, I don't know, Qatar, Bahrain, for kind of initial processing. And then a lot of the ones I met here said after that they went to all over the world. There was Germany, Albania, Mexico. And then after secondary processing, they came to America and they lived in military bases for a while before coming to their final destination. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, there has to be a process for them. So without proper processing, those proper screening, those people, it's hard to just bring them in.
They're vetted for security reasons and
documentations. Most of them have had no proper documentations.
They didn't have time
For SIV, like I said, in order to qualify for SIV, you have to have a proper documentation. So their process took so long in Qatar and other military bases in the U.S. and outside mm-hmm. to process their proper documentation.
And then, you know, they, just like other refugee groups, many of them don't have a choice of where they're resettled unless they have a relative here like you did, but, you know, those 100,000 Afghans that were brought to the United States are spread around the country, and St. Louis received, you know, several hundred families, as you said. How did you first get connected with them? Was it easy to just, I think I remember that last year they, many of them, well, maybe all of them stayed in hotels when they first arrived because I guess one of the reasons was that many of them had large families. It was hard to find affordable housing.
Yeah.
And then also we just maybe weren't ready as a city for this big influx. And so did you get involved when they were in the hotels?
Yes, I did. I started off visiting them in the hotels. And
How did you make the connection, first of all? Did you know any of them personally, or did you just go down to the hotel and say, I want to help?
In our community, we have had a small community before that, and the first thing that we heard about the Afghans who were coming, I was part of the that community, the lead active member of the community. So once I heard about the new families coming and they're staying in hotels, we decided to go out and help those families. And later I got I was introduced with one of lady working for Welcome Neighbor Anne. So, and I decided to voluntary work for Welcome Neighbor and International Institute as well. But I was more on the Welcome Neighbor, supporting Welcome Neighbor mission, okay, to bringing those Afghans and helping them in reset.
All right. Let's pick that up in just a minute. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 News Talk STL. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Okay, welcome back to Stories of New Americans with Mr. Mo. We were talking about your work with the new arrivals, and we were saying that they were staying mostly in hotels. And how long did most of them have to stay in the hotels before they got their own places?
It depends on the bigger, it depends on the size of the family. Some families, they stayed 3 months, some stayed 4 months. I know it was not something not very pleasant for them. So they have to, and as a community member, we have to go and entertain those people, talk to them, visit them on a daily basis. And there was Jerry Schluter, I believe this is he's a good friend of mine, and he was so generous. He opened a soccer indoor stadium for the Afghans to get entertained, play some soccer. You know, Afghans love soccer, and I'm sure they will be liking American football soon.
So you brought some of these kids down to play soccer from the hotels.
Yes.
Were the kids enrolled in school when they were living in the hotels?
Some were not. Not all of them, and that was another challenge. And I was working closely with Welcome Neighbors to make sure if they need any translation, interpretation, and enrolling them in schools, or if they need any physical or overall general checkup at doctor offices. So I was working closely with Welcome Neighbors and my son as well, the 15-year-old. He played a key role in helping those new families while he was going to school. Besides, he was taking care of his brothers and school assignments, school work. He was helping the new new Americans and new Afghans.
You mentioned Welcome Neighbor. Tell us about Welcome Neighbor. What is this group?
Welcome Neighbor is a nonprofit organization helping, I believe that they started first helping Syrian refugees, and later now they're actively helping Afghans. They help Afghans with, if it's in winter, they help them with clothes and all their home, anything they need for the beginning to start up. So they have volunteers going around. They help with the English classes. They help with food. They help with school enrollment, social security, legal documentations. They help with everything.
So. And you've been helping with that too.
Yes,
as an interpreter, but I think you do a lot of that stuff yourself anyway, right?
Yeah. Besides interpretation and translation, I actively go with those families if they need help at any capacity. Let me just give you a small example of last night. One of our new Afghan arrival, he called me around 8, I believe it was 8 o'clock, and I was getting ready to go to bed. He called me. He said somebody break into his car. And so I told him, call 911 and put it on speaker so I can talk to 911 lady.
Good thinking.
So he called 911 and I explained him what happened, and she sent the dispatch. As soon as the officer arrived, I was translating. I did some translation for the officer. And
so this happened when he was at work, you said, right? Happened when he was at work?
Yes, he was in work. As soon as he came from work, he saw that the window is broken and the things are not looking good at his car. So I I did translation and explain everything to the officer, and then later the officer said that he has to go because there's a kidnapping case.
Kidnapping?
Yes.
Okay.
He left, and he said, I told the other officer to come and have the police report for him. So I told the new, my friend, Afghan friend, I told him, as soon as the other officer arrives, call me, I will help you. For some reason, he did not call me, but he called my son, and my son helped him.
How did that happen?
Probably I went to sleep, so he probably called me first, and I missed that.
Maybe give him.
I was so tired.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, so did it get worked out?
Yes.
Police report was made?
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned your son. So he's a high school student.
Right.
He speaks English well and Pashto. And because he's your son, I guess, he's just sort of, that's expected of him to carry on the family tradition of helping.
Yes.
So does he, is it something he enjoys doing, or is he kind of, are you dragging him along because you're his dad?
I think that's in his gene, you know. I always, I've been that way, helping people. I know when I grew up, when I was a little kid, I was a little problem maker.
Really?
Beside I was a good kid, but I was a problem maker too, you know. But as I grow up and I enjoy helping people and I love that, that's something I've always been doing, and I was thinking positively and having discipline in life, that's more important to me. I know disciplining yourself, that's something fake that you have to do it on yourself. But this is life. You have to live up to the social standards. You know, sometimes you, even if you're faking it, you know that, but you have to.
Yeah.
So my son is the same way, you know, he's trying to live up to his dad's standard.
Are all the families out of the hotels now?
Yes.
Okay, but you're still working with them, right? You're
still
helping
working
them out with every day. What kind of, you said you get about a dozen calls a day from people needing help. What are some other examples that have happened recently?
Mostly recently, I'm getting a lot of calls about their SIV.
Yeah, talk about that. How that, there's kind of a big process of
As you know, those Afghans, the ones they arrived to United States, they were granted parolee status.
Humanitarian parole, I think.
Yes, humanitarian parolee status, and they're
so
not
quick,
fully.
They didn't really have time to do the whole SIV thing.
Yes, the resettlement agencies, they opened those law clinic to help those Afghans process their SIV cases. They have HR letters, they have recommendation letters, but you know, it's so much it's a lot of work for the immigration to process all those cases, so it takes time. But those Afghans, they hear different stories, rumors from here and there that they don't stick with SIV, try to go to apply for asylum. And I have to consult them on a daily basis, check their emails. And they come to my house, knock on my door. So I have to go and check what is the status of their SIV case. And then I send an email once in a while to the USCIS to, as soon as they get a reply back, they run again to my house and say, hey, what did they say? And I say, I explain them again. And not this, when something breaks in their house, whether it's AC or heat not working, they call me. And then I have to call the landlord or I have to call someone to help him. But it's just, at the end of the day, it's just win-win situation. I know these problems not going to last forever. They will be one day standing on their own feet.
Yeah, like just like
they'll
you.
Be...
Now, is it true that the people that came here under this humanitarian parole have to change their status to SIV within 2 years? Or are they in danger of being deported? Is that true?
This is what the rumors, like I said, they heard. But I have a good friend in Virginia. I'm not going to say what's name, but... So what they told me that please tell those folks, the ones that they work with American in the base for 2 years in the U.S. Army bases, military bases, that they have to apply for SIV. Don't apply for asylum. So I've been telling those people every day, you know, stick with SIV because you guys are qualified for SIV. You work with American. you supported U.S. mission, so you're qualified for SIV. Stick with SIV. Don't listen what people talking about. Don't listen what somebody calling from Texas or California saying that, hey, we might get deported. No.
But is it true that if they don't get SIV status, they could be deported within 2 years?
I don't know anything about that. I don't think so. Okay. So, and like I said, in order to qualify for SIV, you have to have two years work background with Americans. And most of those folks, the ones I'm talking, they have that background. Some 17 years, some 15 years.
And a lot of them, many of the ones that I met speak English very well. So they're probably not the ones calling you. The ones that are calling you for help are the ones that maybe had other jobs, not interpreting jobs, right? That I would assume that most of the ones that speak English are pretty independent.
Yes.
Okay.
True.
What can Americans in St. Louis do if they want to help? If they want to help newly arrived families, are there things that you can suggest that some of the needs that still exist? Maybe people still need jobs. Maybe if anybody has job openings that want to hire some people with good work ethic.
I would say the biggest challenge right now for those Afghans is to have them resettle somewhere. Housing is a major problem.
Okay.
A lot of families, they are having problem with the housing. They live in houses. Yes, they do have shelters, but they have problem with it. Living in those houses. Depends on the neighborhood where they live. And since those majority of those Afghans, they have little children, they have families. So if St. Louis or the federal government come up with a plan where they have a project going somewhere where they resettle those Afghans, where they can pay the rent-to-own houses slowly, they can make a separate community somewhere. Those Afghans are multitask people. They're very flexible. So work-wise, I believe they will be very productive for St. Louis. And once they find their way and their children grow up, they make the St. Louis better place for everyone to live.
So most of them have been here for a year, I guess, more than a year, because I guess they haven't been in St. Louis that long because they were stuck in the bases before they came to St. Louis, but they've been here for 9 months or more, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them, do you think, are okay with basic needs like furniture and that kind of stuff?
Yes, I believe okay. So. Job-wise, yeah, majority, all of them, they have, I would say 99% have job already, and
uh-huh.
they just need to shine that, and they need to keep moving.
Is Welcome Neighbor still in need of volunteers, or do they welcome volunteers if they want to help in different ways?
Would you recommend? I would say the more volunteers they have, the more help they can provide to the to the new arrivals.
So that's Welcome Neighbor. Officially, it's Welcome Neighbor STL. Is that the?
Yes, Welcome Neighbor STLs. Yeah, and I would say that to the audience. Whatever support you can have, whatever support you can get to the Welcome Neighbors, please. Step up and help Welcome Neighbors so that Welcome Neighbors can help the
maybe English
refugees.
Tutoring would be another area where people could help. English lessons, English tutoring.
English tutoring, counseling, having some of the families, if we get more female volunteers, that's going to be a plus because they some of the families lives here. They're from remote areas in Afghanistan, and their females are the ones they use to live in a big families with mom, dad, sister. So they need more, they need someone to have emotionally support them, counsel them on a daily basis.
Well, that's a good, that brings up another point. They've all experienced a lot of trauma. So do have any of them or some of them that have taken advantage of getting some kind of mental health counseling, or is that sort of like a taboo in that culture still?
I definitely would say that they need that help, but there's believe there's none. There's not such a thing that I have seen that someone is providing that support. And I believe, yeah, there is an agency by Langwell.
Bilingual. Yes. I'm going to plug the place I just retired from. Bilingual International Assistance Services does offer mental health counseling for refugees. Bilingualstl.org is the website.
Okay.
And it's, we have interpreters available if needed. And
so that's a good thing. I mean, and yes, I feel like there is a need for that.
There is a need, as you see, but I suspect that a lot of people would be hesitant to take advantage of it because of just, it's not a thing back home, I guess, right?
It's that's true.
It takes some time to get used to it.
Yes, that's. I believe yes, it's a more cultural thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they hesitant to go in, but there's ways to work with them. You know, eventually, mm-hmm. you know, they will learn that, and they. I feel like some of the, if we have more female workers, you know, working in that group and approach those families, as something that they can work it out. Okay.
Is there anything else? I think we're. Done. Almost out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to say? Any message to our listeners or any words of wisdom that you'd like to leave us with before we...
I would just say to the audience, just love each other, love your neighbor, love your family, love your parents, and support each other and chill out.
Chill out. Okay. That's a good way to end it. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I wish we could talk more. I could embarrass you by telling a lot of stories about things that you and your son have done, but you're modest, so I won't. But anyway, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it. And I've been listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 and 4.1 News Talk STL. Be sure to join us next week. Har vagan gur da janan.